Good Friday evening. It's about 6 minutes after 7 o'clock. This is the evening edition of Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
Our colleague Antoinette Grajeda will be along with us in just a moment.
She will.
Phone volunteers have gone home.
They have.
And so the fundraiser has not stopped.
It has not. No, it is.
It never stops,
It never
right?
stops. It never stops.
Because you always have a chance to pledge online.
Even outside of these 10-day on-air spring or on-air fundraisers.
That's right. But right now, we're reminding you. Mm-hmm. I guess we're not making it any easier because the website is always there, but we are reminding you that you can pledge online at supportkuaf.com.
And how important it is to give.
Because programs, and Friday night is a great example of what public radio can do. We just heard Terry Gross in Fresh Air. You don't hear interviews like that anywhere else in the broadcast world.
Definitely not.
Ozarks at Large, now a show that we put together 6 days a week about this area, this region. Then we have
Beale Street,
which is blues, which you can't find. Then Paul Kelso, Generic Blues Show, a show that has, I mean, it's just great. He's had so many live musicians in and keeps you up to date. He's given you the guide to the Blues in the Natural State Festival that's going on even as we speak on Dixon Street in Fayetteville. And then we've got Shades of Jazz.
With Robert Ginsberg.
And then even after that, at midnight, Goodnight Jazz with Daniel. Mm-hmm. Wide variety that you can't hear anywhere else. If that kind of radio, if Friday night's important to you, you can do your part, contribute what you can, you decide how much, and you can go on the web too.
SupportKUAF.com.
Ahead on tonight's edition of Ozarks at Large, a conversation with Michael Tilley, as is our Friday custom. He's the editor and publisher of TheCityWire.com. Also, Senator Mark Pryor was in the Carver Center for Public Radio earlier today. That conversation ahead and much more.
But first, with a law set to take effect requiring Arkansans to show a photo ID to vote, state Republicans are preparing a campaign to raise awareness. Doyle Webb is the state party chairman.
The Republican Party of Arkansas is announcing Operation Vote Arkansas, a plan to begin a comprehensive voter education program that will seek to inform the voters of Arkansas of these new requirements and will assist all eligible voters in obtaining their proper identification in order to vote.
The party is also lining up volunteers in each county who will be willing to drive people to county offices to get photo IDs. The new restriction won't take effect until January or when funding is available for the state to provide free IDs. In the meantime, the American Civil Liberties Union is preparing to challenge the law in court. State Director Rita Sklar says many won't have the needed materials to obtain an ID.
But you have to have certain papers to get a photo ID. You have to have a birth certificate, for instance. There are people who never had a birth certificate. They were born at home. Or often African Americans in the old days weren't issued birth certificates.
The measure was vetoed by Governor Mike Beebe, but overridden by the legislature.
The Northwest Arkansas Council recently completed a study regarding air service in Northwest Arkansas. Among the findings, business demands in the area need more low-cost air service. While Allegiant Air already flies out of the Northwest Arkansas Regional Airport, Rob Smith, a spokesperson for the Northwest Arkansas Council, says the area's sole low-cost carrier doesn't provide the daily service many business travelers say they need.
They need to be able to go out on a Monday and come back on a Wednesday if that's necessary. And we think that it'll drive down the cost of having employees work in Northwest Arkansas for Walmart suppliers, frankly, for every company. It'll happen for just individuals who travel. I mean, the cost of everything goes down. One of the things we calculated was that XNA had 541,000 paying passengers in 2012. We took the average fare at XNA and we took the average round-trip fare for the nation. And the difference between those is about $154.
Smith says the difference in round-trip airfare between XNA and the national average, multiplied by the number of passengers traveling through the airport, leaves Northwest Arkansas travelers paying $83 million more for flying out of the regional airport. We'll have more on the pursuit of additional low-cost air carriers next week on Ozarks at Large.
Arkansas finance officials say the state's March revenues dipped below last year's figures and didn't meet their expectations as tax collections lagged and income tax refunds rebounded. Economist John Shelnut with the state's Department of Finance and Administration explains.
March revenue collections came in below forecast by $15.1 million or 4.2% below forecast. and also below forecast for gross general revenue, which is collections, by $11 million, or 2.1%. The main story this month came from the catch-up of refunds paid out in individual income tax filings.
Individual income tax refunds in March, which lagged in January and February, were $10.1 million above the same month last year and $5.4 million above forecast.
It's baseball season. The Northwest Arkansas Naturals opened their 2013 season last night in Springdale in the opening contest of a three-game series against Midland. The Naturals fell 11-0. The series continues tonight at Arbest Ballpark in Springdale. And the Arkansas Razorbacks last night opened their second road series in SEC play, the first of three games. The Diamond Hogs defeated the Alabama Crimson Tide 3-1 last night. That means the Razorbacks are now 22-8 on the season, 7-3 in conference play. The three-game series continues tonight at Sewell Thomas Stadium in Tuscaloosa.
Partly cloudy tonight with lows around 48 degrees. Mostly sunny and warm for the start of the Fayetteville Farmers Market tomorrow and for the Heritage Festival in Fort Smith. Highs from 70 degrees in northwest Arkansas to 75 degrees in the Arkansas River Valley. Increasing clouds tomorrow night with lows in the mid-50s.
This is Ozarks at Large, and I'm Kyle Kellums. With me on the phone from Fort Smith is Michael Tilley, who is the editor and publisher of thecitywire.com that covers business, politics, culture, and more for the entire KUAF listening area. A beautiful spring weekend shaping up, Michael.
Yes, it is, and I'm happy. It was nice to watch the Razorbacks hold on against Alabama last night. Can the Razorbacks not make it where it's a close game in the ninth? Can we get away from that?
No, because, you know, it's much more exciting that way.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to have stomach lining.
Well, that's the whole point of baseball.
Okay.
Let's see. Interesting development that our friend and colleague Roby Brock first had this week at Talk Business, and it appears more so than ever that Mike Ross is heading for a gubernatorial bid.
Yes, and this all began when, you know, Mike Ross decided early on in the process that he was not going to run for governor. A lot of people wanted him to run. He wanted a private sector job. He had served in public service for 20, 25 years, 10 to 12 of those as a congressman. And so he took a very well-paying private sector job with Southwest Power Pool. Well, when Dustin McDaniel's extramarital affair blew up, and McDaniel, who was considered the, you know, the cinch for the Democratic primary, had to drop out, it just opened the doors, and there was a political vacuum left. And so there have been a lot of Democrats, a lot of political leaders in the state leaning on Mr. Ross to get back in the race. Well, it looks like he's back in. Like I said earlier, somewhere there's probably a print shop that's already got Mike Ross for governor signs printed. But he sent out an email. He resigned from his Southwest Power Pool job and sent out an email and said that he was resigning to pursue another opportunity in public service. So if that's not running for governor, there'll be everyone in Arkansas will be surprised.
That would be the big surprise.
Yes.
So now we have it appears, if it does happen, that Mike Ross announces, it appears we have two men. Bill Halter has announced. Mike Ross, it appears, will announce. And on the Republican side, Curtis Coleman and Asa Hutchinson. Chance that that might be it?
Oh, I don't. I'd be very surprised if that is it, especially on the Republican side. You know, but on the Democratic side, that will be interesting. This, Halter is very wealthy. He's already loaned himself about $650,000. He's got a little over $1 million in the bank. It's going to be could be a pretty nasty primary. It could be like what we saw between Mr. Halter and Senator Lincoln back in 2010, and that cycle on the Democratic side. So it'll be interesting to see how much the Democrats beat up on each other, but the race, the conventional wisdom is the race will probably end up between Ross, Mike Ross, and Asa Hutchinson, and that's anybody's call at this point. I know Hutchinson in some of the polls that Roby has conducted performs higher than both Halter and Ross, but there's a lot of money to be left, a lot of money to be spent in this race yet, and so it's going to be interesting. Us political geeks, I'm licking my chops at being able to watch this one.
Some news, some good employment news for the city of Fort Smith this week. Health Management Associates, known as HMA, says they'll operate a regional service that's going to bring about 500 jobs to Fort Smith.
500 jobs, and they estimate an annual payroll of $21.5 million. And so if you plug that in, it's a little over $42,000 a year, which is $8,000 to $7,000 a year more than our per capita income now. So these aren't just typical service sector jobs. These are good-paying jobs. And if there's a region in Arkansas that needs this kind of news, it was definitely the Fort Smith region. Hit hard with a lot of manufacturing losses, lost Whirlpool, but this facility, now it's going to go where the Phoenix Expo Center is. That's the only little downside, I guess, but I don't think the owner of the Phoenix Expo Center minds. He's going to have probably a good monthly lease check, but the 500 folks are supposed to be employed within 12 months. It's about a little over $13 million project total to revamp and put in the equipment, but it's a service center, and essentially what these people will be doing will be providing support to 27 hospitals within the 71 hospitals owned by Health Management. Health Management, of course, is a Florida-based company. They own Sparks Health System in Fort Smith, and they operate Summit Medical in Van Buren. So they already had a good presence here, so this is just a larger presence. But, this helps kind of hopefully get some confidence back among people in Fort Smith and Fort Smith business leaders that, these things, Fort Smith is still attracted to this type of investment. And fortunately, it's not just some call center. It's a true back office administration operation.
Finally, on the CYB, we've been following a story that I guess I would call sort of a shelving story.
Well, yeah, or a lack of. And how this got started, it's interesting. Bloomberg News has just had they've just been on a tear with Walmart with several stories about their restocking issues, stores that with shelves that are bare. And apparently Bloomberg got a hold of about 1,000 emails or so of people complaining. Well, I'm not here to defend Walmart, but sometimes I'm puzzled by what some of our folks in the media do. Walmart has millions and millions of people who come through their stores every day, and if you're just getting complaints from 1,000, that's a very small element. And also, Walmart says it has about its shelves are stocked at about 90% to 95% on most times, so that's pretty good. And this became a problem in Bloomberg's eyes, and frankly, Kyle, the Walmart stores that I've been in between Little Rock, Fort Smith, and Northwest Arkansas, I don't remember seeing shelves that were just bare and vacant. So we pulled together a story about what Walmart is trying to do to make this process even simpler, and they're using a mobile application of all things that ties the suppliers with the back room operations at these stores with the inventory system that gives people a better sense of, how many jars of peanut butter are on the shelves and or in the back room. And, based on sales history, do they go through two pallets of those a week? And if they do we need to get another one in? So it's that kind of thing that they're working on, and I'm oversimplifying that.
Sure, but is it in real time? I mean, would they be able to in real time say, oh wow, seven whatever of peanut butter just went out the door? I mean, may be out later today.
Well, that's my understanding, but the process is that the vendors and the store, and Walmart wants to be careful about what kind of data it's let flying out the door, so to speak. But yes, that's the process. What do we have? And a lot of this also comes down to these individual store managers. How aggressive are they in making sure that the data is correct and they're staying on top of the system? It's called Spark. The system is called Spark, this mobile application, and it essentially provides suppliers the visibility with it. It allows them to look within the store from a data point standpoint and to monitor, what product is there and how much is needed. And, if it takes me 3 days to get this widget there, and it's at this level, then I need to order Tuesday or I need to order now. So they're putting that in place. And again, I'm oversimplifying that, but and this also is not just a Walmart problem. This is a problem across the retail sector. You know, because these companies, Walmart and Target and these folks, they don't want to have just big, huge warehouses full. They want to try to get that product into the stores without having to sit around for too long. So it's a huge balancing act. But again, Bloomberg just has been on a tear with them. And typically, when Walmart does something stupid, we all agree and say, okay, yeah, this has been a somewhat of a mystery as to why Bloomberg's after him so hard on this issue, because I don't think it's that bad of an issue, and Walmart and its vendors appear to have a good system in place to try to respond to it.
Michael Tilley is the editor and publisher of thecitywire.com that covers politics, business, culture, and more for the entire listening area. He also wants a comfortable Arkansas Razorback baseball win tonight in Tuscaloosa. Michael, thanks for your time.
All right, we'll see if that happens.
Yeah. This is Ozarks at Large. With me in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is Senator Mark Pryor. Thank you for taking time out.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Senate is in recess, but we'll reconvene on Monday. And one of the first things, I think, that will be discussed is immigration reform. There is this plan that has been worked out between the AFL-CIO, the Chambers of Commerce, the so-called Gang of Eight senators. Does this mean there is a real chance for immigration reform?
I think there's a better chance to do comprehensive immigration reform this year than we've seen in a long, long time. And what I've told the eight senators who are doing this, it's four Democrats, four Republicans, I tell them all, I say, look, I'm cheering you on. I'm glad you're doing this. I want you to be successful in reaching consensus on these issues. But at the same time, I can't tell you I'm going to vote for it yet because I don't know what you've put together. And so they are supposed to make an announcement maybe this coming week. Please understand that it'll go through the Judiciary Committee. There'll be a robust, you know, amendment process and whatnot in the committee, and then it'll come to the floor. And so it may be, you know, two or three months away before we actually have a chance to look at it on the floor. But I'm glad that they are working together. The only way you're going to solve that issue, really, and most other issues in Washington, is in a bipartisan way. And so when you see a group of senators come together, try to work through it, that's the only way to solve it.
As you mentioned, the legislation hasn't been revealed yet. Will be scheduled to be on Monday. There is discussion that there will be a clearer path to citizenship for some people who come here to work.
Yeah, I think some of them are calling it earned status because it's not going to be an easy thing. I hear, again, I don't know, but I hear it's going to take about 10 years. They can stay in the U.S., but they have to go through a 10-year process, make sure all their back taxes are paid and all these other things. I'm not quite sure of the details. And then even at that point, if they actually want to become a citizen, I think it's an additional 3 years. That's what I'm hearing. It's a total of 13 years.
We're about a month into the effects of sequestration. Theories abound that both parties feel there might be some political gain because of the sequestration. Deficit hawks saying, see, stuff is being cut. Others saying, see, the other side is cutting social programs. If there is indeed political gain by both parties, it doesn't seem like sequestration may end anytime soon.
No, I think we have sequestration for the rest of this fiscal year. And I think that, you know, the idea of it was supposed to be so bad and so painful that it would force us to get to a budget deal, which we didn't get to the budget deal, so now we have sequestration. We're still going to continue to see some pain over the course of this year. There will be things that happen that will be kind of surprising and inconvenient. It's probably not going to be as bad as some people say and probably not as easy as other people say. So, you know, I think my bottom line is it's just not a good way to govern. Here again, we need to reach these bipartisan budget deals. You know, right now there's kind of a Democratic budget and there's a Republican budget. That's a dead-end street. We need to come together and put these budget deals together and do it. And, you know, the Senate did pass a budget a couple of weeks ago, but again, it would be considered a Democratic budget. The Republicans passed one in the House, it'd be considered a Republican budget. You know, who knows what happens beyond that, but it's just not the way to govern. We need to come together and get to consensus and work together and work through these issues. And the budget is very important. It's about national priorities and it's about all kinds of different things and how our government should work and to some extent you know, what type of government services we're going to provide, how much defense we're going to provide, how much things like law enforcement, education, highways, you know, all these things are about national priorities. So the Congress has done a very poor job in recent years on this.
Will there be discussion, do you think, after Monday, April 8th, about new gun laws or some sort of formation of gun laws?
Yeah, there's supposedly, when we get back next week, we're going to apparently go to the gun legislation that came out of the Judiciary Committee. I've already said that I'm going to not support the assault weapons ban that Senator Feinstein of California is offering. I will look at the other things. I know there will be some amendments on the floor. And, you know, I'll look and see what people offer. And I'm actually a co-sponsor of one amendment, which I think is endorsed by the NRA even. But it's about making sure the right information goes into a mental health database and also to make sure you can get your name out of the database when the time's right. And, you know, that's basically just about the integrity of the information that they use on the background check. But that's a bipartisan amendment, too. There's four of us working on that. So I assume we'll offer that and try to get that passed. But I don't really know. I don't have a great feel right now because I'm in Arkansas, not up there. I don't have a great feel for the other amendments that will be coming, but I'm sure there will be several. We'll look at them as they come.
Background checks, I mean, some people call it the loophole for the gun shows. Mm-hmm. Any chance that there would be momentum to try to close what some people call a loophole?
You know, I think it's possible that you could do that. It really depends on how it's structured. I know Senator Leahy has been working on something there. They've tried to – Senator Coburn of Oklahoma has been part of this process. There's been a process with Senator Coburn of Oklahoma and Senator Manchin of West Virginia, and then a few others like Chuck Schumer of New York, et cetera. But they have been working on something, and to my knowledge, they've not unveiled that. So we'll see. They were trying to come up with something that would be agreeable to everybody, basically, that would enhance the background checks, but maybe not go as far as some people want to go. So, you know, let's just see what they come up with. And I told them, again, I will certainly look at what they have, and I'll just have to evaluate it when I see it.
You're in Arkansas at the time when we've just had a week-old now oil spill down in Mayflower, and many people are pointing to that as a reason to maybe pause on the pipeline project coming from Canada, which you have supported. Any pause for you?
You know, not really. I mean, first I want to know what happened on this pipeline. We have to remember this pipeline is 60 years old. And a lot of this is about how they're engineered and how they're built and how they're maintained. And we don't know the answers to this yet. But we do know that new pipelines are engineered better than the old ones, and they're maintained better, and they have more technology along with those. But I do think it's very important that we find out what happened in Mayflower and why. And I know the families there that have been impacted by the spill are frustrated because they're not getting any answers, and a lot of them can't get back in their homes yet. So, you know, we'll look at it. But I do think this, people have to understand that a pipeline is really the easiest, safest, and cheapest way to transport this. And your other options are going to be to put it in train cars, which can have, you know, wrecks and spills, put it on 18-wheelers, that's an issue. So really a pipeline is the best way. And I know we've had a spill, and we do need to look at it, but the way I look at it, it's a little bit like you hate to say it, but it's a little bit like when a plane crashes. You know, air travel is very safe. It does happen every now and then. That doesn't mean you shut down, you know, the skies. That just means you make sure you're even safer next time.
Other priorities for you as the Senate reconvenes?
Well, jobs and the economy is going to be real big for me. You know, I really hope that we get our fiscal act together in Washington. I feel like the economy is starting to really turn the corner and get some traction and grow, and we're going to have some economic numbers today, and I look forward to seeing what those are and analyzing those. But, you know, I feel like right now the economy's ready to take off as long as Congress doesn't screw it up. And I'm not kidding about that. I think that people, the Wall Street and just businesses generally and just the country at large, even the world, is looking to the United States for leadership, and the Congress is a big part of that. If we can demonstrate that we can get our act together and we can do some of the basic things like do a budget, you know, some of the hard things maybe like, you know, immigration or whatever it is, but if we can demonstrate that we can work together, then that sends very positive signals, you know, to the economy, and hopefully the economy will just continue to grow throughout the rest of this year.
Senator Mark Pryor, thank you for your time.
Thank you. Good to be here.
This is a Friday evening edition of Ozarks at Large. In a moment, Christina Thomas and our usual Friday conversation with Becca Martin Brown from Northwest Arkansas Newspapers. Taking just a moment here to remind you that the spring fundraiser for KUAF does continue. We do not have phone volunteers with us at this moment, but we do have a way for you to pledge. Perhaps you've been hearing the fundraiser for some time this week. You've been meaning to call. You've been meaning to pledge online, and you just haven't had time because, as the New York Times has said, busy is the new good. When someone asks you how you're doing, most people, we all say busy now. Maybe you've been very busy, but hopefully for your Friday night, this beautiful spring Friday night, you're not that busy. And you have a moment to contribute to KUAF. It's very easy to do, and you can do it right now online at supportkuaf.com. You determine the amount. All the information is there. I bet if you really wanted to, it could take less than 2 minutes. Supportkuaf.com is the way to pledge. You can also pledge through the KUAF app on your smartphone. Still to come later on this edition of Friday Ozarks at Large, we'll hear from Farmer and the Markets. They came into the Furman Garner Performance Studio Thursday night, talked to and played for Antoinette Grajeda. We'll hear that in a little bit. But right now, finding out more about farmers markets, many of them opening tomorrow. Christina Thomas.
Thank you, Kyle. And hello, Becca.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm all right.
It's Friday.
It is. And it's spring. But do you know how I know in spite of the weather?
I know I'm going to the farmer's market in the morning.
You are correct. It is farmer's market season. If you're new to Northwest Arkansas, you've got to understand that the market isn't just a place to buy vegetables and flowers. It's a place to pet dogs, meet people, run into old friends, find new artisans, drink coffee, and wake up surrounded by the beauty of the Fayetteville Square. But it's not the only game in the region. So here, courtesy of my colleague Kevin Kinder, are some of the other farmer's markets coming to Northwest Arkansas.
Okay.
All right, the hours for Fayetteville are through November 23rd, 7 a.m. to 2 p.m. Saturday, and 7 a.m. to 1 p.m. Tuesday and Thursday.
Do we know if the Tuesday and Thursday, are they starting next week also?
I believe they
are.
Okay. I think the Saturday one is kickoff.
I like to go there, walk over.
Yeah, it's fun. Mm-hmm. I like Saturday morning, though. I like dogs and coffee, not necessarily together. The Botanical Garden of the Ozarks Market starts Saturday. The winter market's closed. The new market's open 4 to 7 p.m. on Wednesday and 7 a.m. to noon on Saturday. The Gravett Farmers Market opens Saturday.
Oh, I
it's
like Gravett.
It's from 8 to 2 at the Old Town Park in Gravett, and they have the same things we're used to seeing here. You know, chickens, eggs, pork, and locally made furniture.
Do we see furniture here?
Not often.
Okay.
But they have great hats. Well, I got to talk to you about a hat place when we get done. The Central Ozarks Farmers and Artisans Market starts April 15th in Harrison. It's from 6 a.m. to noon on Tuesday and Saturday, and that's on the downtown square. The Siloam Springs Farmers Market starts April 20th, and that's from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Tuesday and Saturday at City Park. The Bentonville Farmers Market starts April 27th, and that's from 7 a.m. to 1 p.m. Saturday on the downtown square. They have a lot of food. They have a lot of chef demonstrations and things like that.
To show you how to
make
the things you're buying.
The Rogers Farmers Market opens April 27th, and that's from 7 a.m. to 1 p.m. Wednesday and Saturday at Arkansas and Elm Streets downtown. The Springdale Farmers Market opens May 4th. Are you seeing a trend here that we're going forward? 7 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday. The Springdale Farmers Market at Shiloh Square opens May 4th, and that's from 4 to 7 p.m. on Monday and 7 a.m. to 1 p.m. Saturday on Emma Avenue in Shiloh Square. And the Farmers Community Market is from 8 a.m. to noon on Saturday at Clarksville. And finally, the Newton County Farmers Market starts May 17th from 4 to 6 p.m. on Fridays on the Jasper Square.
So no matter where you're listening, there's a farmers market.
Pretty much. And the list is in today's What's Up, because I know you weren't furiously scribbling notes.
Well, and as Antoinette Grajeda tells us, there's also music.
There is.
At farmers markets.
Oh, do you have that? You do. There's something good coming up, folks.
Yeah.
Also this weekend, Goodbye Charlie is on stage at Rogers Little Theater. This is a 1950s script about a guy who's a cad and just a general jerk, and he's reincarnated as a woman. Imagine his surprise. 8 o'clock today and tomorrow and 2 o'clock Sunday. Tickets are $16 for balcony seating and $45 for dinner. Steel Magnolias is on stage at the Fort Smith Little Theater. 8 o'clock today and Saturday and 2:30 on Sunday. This weekend, on Saturday specifically, is the Heritage Festival at the Fort Smith National Historic Site from 10 a.m. to 4, and the Renaissance and Fantasy Fair of the Ozarks is from 10 to 5 on Saturday and Sunday at the Washington County Fairgrounds in Fayetteville. You might run into some friends of mine out there because the Society for Creative Anachronism will be practicing medieval fighting and arts and sciences on Saturday. Admission to the fair is $3 to $6.
So will you be there?
Walking around.
Walking around.
I'm kind of in my, normal phase.
Okay.
That should scare a lot of people.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
This is a Friday night edition of Ozarks at Large. It's about, 24 minutes before 8 o'clock. And this week during Ozarks at Large, we've been talking to some people about their professions or about what they do and how that kind of relates to the public radio fundraiser model, since this is the spring fundraising time for KUAF. Antoinette Grajeda yesterday talked to Terry Gosnell, who is the pastor at Trinity United Methodist Church in Fayetteville. And Antoinette came up with the idea to talk to a pastor because she said there are similarities between a church congregation and the KUAF listening congregation in the fact that both KUAF and radio and a pastor are talking to people and they are listening. And also there is an element of support. So before you can have the support, you have to have the attention. And Antoinette asked Terry Gosnell about that.
The way that we do that, or the healthiest way, is to be an attractive, vibrant community. Statistics show that 87% of people that come in the doors, they make their decision like in the first few minutes. And so it really has nothing to do with the preacher, quote unquote. Hopefully it won't. There are a few people that are attracted by the pastor, and sometimes that goes well, sometimes not so well. So the onus is on me to, yes, connect with them initially, but then help them get connected on a deeper basis with the community of faith. The tricky part is that it's God's church. It's not our church, but it is our community within those walls and without those, beyond those walls. So in a consumerist society, it is even harder because those roots go deep, because you're exactly right. How do you get people to come back? Usually, especially like with a product or with radio, people want to benefit from it. People want to know that their lives will be better from that relationship. They will want to get something. And that is the hard part about being a pastor, about being a community of faith, because we don't really have a lot to give to them except a stronger, deeper spiritual connection, which sometimes people get aggravated because they come and they say, well, we're paying the bills. We want to get something out of this. And, I can see that and I can relate to that. But as a pastor in the Christian tradition, as a community of Christians, that's not what we're about. We're not about getting. We're about giving. And we understand that that takes a long time to develop. It takes a long time to develop an attitude of gratitude.
You mentioned the attitude of gratitude. Once you've got your community, the decision that they want to give back. As a public radio station, we have honor fundraisers a couple times a year. So, we ask people for a couple of days in a row, to remind them that, we're here because of, we're supported by you. Mm-hmm. So as a preacher, people pass the plate, pass whatever basket, asking for donations week after week. How do you, ask your congregation week after week to continue to give?
Mm-hmm. Well, we don't actually ask them week to week. We do pass the plate week to week, and it's pretty blatant. It's the offering. It's your time to give back. Well, the way we do that is what I just explained, about it takes a long time you know, and usually there's a once a year time that we focus on giving. And so there are times that the finance chair or even I, as the pastor, have to talk to the congregation that, hey, we need to pay our bills. We need to, you know, pay our salaries and our staff. Mm-hmm. We're a little tight. But I think it takes planning. I think it takes commitment and diligence and a lot of prayer. but it's getting people excited about their relationship with Christ. And in reference to NPR or any kind of news station, it's getting people excited about being a part of their world and hearing comprehensive news that only y'all can give them and your viewpoint of the world and your lens. And so it's similar, you know. What you have to communicate to your people, just like I have to communicate, is how will your life be better with this relationship?
Antoinette Grajeda talked with Terry Gosnell, a pastor of Trinity United Methodist Church in Fayetteville, yesterday, and they discussed the similarities between the communication between a pastor and congregation and kind of the communication between a radio station, a public radio station, and listeners and contributors, and how that all has similarities. We'll have some more of those stories next week.
We will.
Christina Thomas is with me inside. I've come back to the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio. One thing about this week, we're going all over the place.
All over the place. I know it's kind of nice to. I was actually thinking earlier that, you know, all these restaurants keep us very well fed.
But yes, they
being,
do.
But being on the, you know, on, during a non-year fundraiser, we're running all over the place instead of just sitting at our desk.
So we're burning off whatever
right, we're burning
consume.
Off all this great food.
You can help us out, continue to bring you the great radio that KUAF does, whether it's you listen to Friday Night for Ozarks at Large or Robert Ginsburg and Shades of Jazz or Paul Kelso, Generic Blues Show, or maybe you stay up way late for Daniel. And maybe you just listen to KUAF all the time. You appreciate the news on Morning Edition, All Things Considered, the entertainment of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. All those programs have one thing in common.
They cost us money.
They do. To give you an example, Morning Edition, I know, cost this year $108,000.
All Things Considered, about $56,000.
Yeah, almost $56,000. Mm-hmm. That's just two shows. Now, admittedly, those are two of the higher price
right.
tags, but keep adding. Prairie Home Companion is not an inexpensive show, but people, we know you want to hear them, and it is our mission to bring them to you. And the way we are able to do that is with a major portion of our budget coming from you.
Over 60% comes from right. contributing listeners.
Right. 90% is generated locally when mm-hmm. you count underwriters and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But 60, more than a little, I think, over 60% comes directly from you. And listeners like you.
And when you think that our budget is over $1 million,
right.
our operating budget is over $1 million, I mean, that is, what? I mean, over $500,000?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah,
that comes
absolutely, yes.
from you, our listeners.
And just to give you an idea about programming costs, the national programming costs, just baseline national programming costs this year, $300,000 compared to $265,000 last year. So costs have gone up for the national programs. They pass that to us. And we don't feel that bad about it because we know there are thousands of people who listen. And all we're asking you to do is your part, whatever that is. You can't call in right now. Well, you could call, but no one will answer because there are no phone volunteers.
Leave a message, maybe.
I guess. But the more efficient way, the way we know that we'll for sure get your information is by pledging online.
Right. Our website is supportkuaf.com. It will take you directly to a pledge form where you can enter in your credit card information securely. And there you go.
Mentioned earlier that Antoinette Grajeda invited Farmer and the Markets to the Furman Garner Performance Studio last night and talked to them a little bit, and they played a song. They will be at the Fayetteville Farmers Market tomorrow. And she asked them when they came in, like, okay, you're Farmer and the Markets. Who's Farmer? Who's the Markets?
Whoever is singing lead vocals at the current time of the song.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I guess
so everybody.
Sense.
Pretty much.
Well, we actually started out as a three-piece with me, Jackson, and a friend from our high school, Prairie Grove High School. And eventually he just kind of got tired of playing music altogether. So we were just like, we got to find someone else. And so we added Cody.
Hi, how are you?
A little bit later. And then Cody was like, we need some ladies up in here, so, or a lady rather. And then, so we added Ashton in. And then this is just what it's been so far. We've played, I guess, two full seasons
yep,
together.
For about 2 years
two
now.
Two full seasons of the Farmer's Market.
So you started while you were still in high school.
Yes, me and Jax, I think, were juniors in high school at the time.
So how did you come up with the idea to do that? Because you started by playing at the Fayetteville Farmers Market. I mean, that's giving up your Saturday mornings when you could be sleeping in because you don't have school.
Oh, yes.
It was definitely a sacrifice, but... You know,
definitely
worth it. Well, yeah, it was worth it. You know, we just decided first, we were like, hey, let's make some extra money by doing what we love on the square. So we all, you know, one morning we just decided to all get out and play, and we just kept doing it.
And got really good responses from the people. And people just, they love us. And so we just kept doing it for them. And so there we go.
So essentially you started out busking. You were on the corner and put down a hat or?
A guitar case, yeah.
Guitar case.
We just put that out in front of us. And we even eventually made like a sign with our name on it.
Right.
Getting super official.
Very professional.
Of course.
And you said people responded well. It's responded well that now you guys have been booked places other than just the farmer's market. Is that correct?
Very much so. Cody, tell them about it.
Well, we do weddings and birthday parties, and we'll just do whatever you want us to. You know, funerals.
Oh, dear.
Haven't done one of those yet.
But, no. Yeah. But old folks' homes.
We're open-minded.
Yeah, that was adorable.
Oh, yeah. Retirement homes are my favorite. Yeah.
Tell me about that. You said it was adorable, Ashton.
Well, all the old people just loved it, and they were so cute because they were dancing and getting into the music and dodging the sunshine.
Where were you playing at?
Arkanshire Retirement Home, I believe.
Oh, okay. That's a lot of fun. What kind of music do you guys play?
Folk and rock and, you know, lively music that people like to dance to.
Pretty much, yeah. We play some older stuff that some of the older folks recognize.
That's what I was wondering.
Yeah, some new stuff that we like and...
like change it a little bit.
Yeah, we make it fit the instruments that we have, you know, a little xylophone, ukulele, acoustic guitar, and some acoustic drums.
Well, how did you decide on what songs you're going to do? Because it sounds very varied. So how do you decide which pieces you want to incorporate into your repertoire?
Well, we mostly just like, we listen to them with our instrumentation and the farmer's market in minds. And we've kind of over the years learned what works with people and what doesn't. So we listen. And if we feel like it's going to get a good response from the people at the market, then we'll try and do it and see if it works out.
Yeah. And sometimes we'll play something and people stand around and just like be glued to it, you know, to us, and they'll clap and dance. Then sometimes we'll play something and people just kind of walk away. And
then we just know to like avoid stuff similar to that for the future.
It's kind of like a trial and error process.
A little bit. Oh.
Well, you're known for playing at the Fayetteville Farmers Market. That's outdoors. How does that mess with your acoustics?
The strings got attuned very quickly.
Yeah, if it's
especially
like
in the heat.
Especially warm or especially cold.
Yeah. But, you know, we're meant to be, the sound itself is meant to be just that acoustic, which means it's not plugged into anything, no mic, so we don't have to worry about, you know, whose levels are this or that. We listen to each other, we hear the natural sounds that we're all making, and just make it, kind of adjust ourselves from there.
Yeah, somehow magically it all pretty much worked out from the beginning, like as far as the levels of all our different instruments. I guess it was just us getting lucky with that.
Well, you also have to deal with the weather. I imagine you don't play in the rain or the snow or anything like that. So
not.
Is there too cold or too hot? Is that a...
Not too hot yet.
We've played in some hot weather.
With the too cold, we would get hand warmers and put them in our sleeves.
Yes, yeah. Oh.
But we'd still be pretty cold and eventually have to stop. But it would get us through some pretty cold temperatures.
Any desire to go beyond just playing covers?
There's been lots of talk
thrown it around, you know. Mm-hmm.
I think it'd be great. We just need to sit down and work on some stuff.
Yeah, people definitely want us to. They're always asking, you know, you guys have a CD yet? Or when's that CD coming out? You know, we're just like,
Sure.
I guess it's definitely different writing our own material than just kind of learning a song and making it our own.
Yeah, I think part of the appeal of us is the fact that we're playing these well-known songs that people already enjoy, and they enjoy seeing that fresh new twist. So it's kind of frightening, you know, attempting to go beyond that and writing your own stuff no one's ever heard before, you know. So.
How do you make it your own? How do you put it that fresh new twist on it?
Sometimes we would change like the original like key signatures like in our Christmas songs.
Yeah.
Which was got interesting responses from some people.
Yeah. Right. And really just the instruments we use, like trying to make all these songs work with a glockenspiel, like, you know, it definitely changes the sound. And
yeah, just naturally.
Pretty much, yeah.
How did you come up with your arrangement of instruments? Because they're pretty unique from the things that we've had here in the Furman Garner Performance Studio.
Yeah, we actually kind of took some ideas from some other local musicians in Fayetteville. Mm-hmm. There was this band called Cadre. They haven't been around for, I guess, about a year or so. They've been disbanded. But mm-hmm. They had a girl that played minimal glockenspiel, not quite as much as I do. And then they had a percussionist who played cajon and had a tambourine duct taped to a cinder block, which is what we did originally. Now we've got a little bracket.
We upgraded that, to an official bracket to hold it.
And so we did kind of take some ideas, but I like to think of it as, you know, they're not around anymore, so we're kind of, you know, carrying on their legacy.
So what can we look forward to, you guys, this year? Will we see you at the Fayetteville Farmers Market every Saturday, or do you split that between here and Bentonville?
We switch back about every other one between here and Bentonville. Yes. But we'll also be playing, like, local events. Like, we'll be at the Democrats Rock event mm-hmm. on Friday night at Pratt Place Barn.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just might end up other places.
So if people want to find out where you're going to be, how can they find out more information
Facebook
about you guys?
Page.
Yes. Facebook.
We post a lot of that.
Okay, so go to Facebook and look for Farmer and the Markets.
Yes.
Farmer and the Markets.
Okay, so this Saturday you will be at the Fayetteville Square for the Fayetteville Farmers Market. What time will you guys be out there?
7 a.m.
We'll be there early and play.
We'll be there before you even are up.
Probably.
I am not. I don't get up that early, but so 7 on the whole time, or
pretty much until it starts slowing down, until we start feeling like, you know,
usually
12 or 1.
Okay.
Very much so.
You guys are going to play something for me. What are you going to play?
We'll play some favorites from people from the market.
Do you guys want to get set up for music then?
Yes,
let's do it.
And this is called what? I'm sorry.
Chains by the Beatles.
By the Beatles, thank you.
The Markets inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio yesterday, and they will be at the Farmers Market tomorrow.
As will I.
Will you?
I'm planning on getting up early.
I love the Farmers Market. I love them all.
Mm-hmm.
I've been to one in Eureka Springs. I've been to Bentonville. I've been to Gravette before. And Fayetteville, of course, is where you and I both live. And I do love them, but I'm not going to hit any of them tomorrow.
Right.
I'm waking up in Newton County.
I'm kind of envious of that, too. It's nice. And today was so nice.
Yeah. And tomorrow is supposed to be maybe a little windy. I'm staying somewhere between Mount Sherman and Ponca.
Okay.
Also known, I think, as heaven. And I'll be there just one night because I'm back with you on Sunday morning.
Sunday morning, right.
But just a nice little escape inside the fundraiser. Thanks to everyone who has called in during this fundraiser, by the way. Here are five people who are going to be happy because they are winners of the pair of tickets each to see Anything Goes at Walton Arts Center
opening night. Tuesday,
right.
April 9th.
That's right. Eric Johnson, Terrence Conkey. Terrence, I may have mispronounced your name again, sorry. Bob Anderson, Marty Hudson, Claire Insell. They knew the correct answer to the Thursday question.
Which was?
I don't think you were in the studio either for the question or the answer.
I was in the studio for the question.
Okay. And the question was, 195 years ago yesterday, U.S. Congress formally approved the design for the U.S. flag.
Right.
And it had the 13 stripes we know now, and then a star for every state at that time. And the question was, how many stars were on the flag on that date in April 1818?
I did not hear the answer. My guess, oh, I don't know, 22.
So close. 20. The 13 colonies, of course, and then between the 13 colonies and that day in 1818, Vermont, Kentucky, Tennessee, Ohio, Louisiana, Indiana, and Mississippi had joined the Union. You know what? Had they waited till just December 1818, you would have been right, because Illinois and Alabama were both admitted in December of that same year. Now, if a new state is added, the new star is not put on the flag until Flag Day.
Which is in June.
Right. But if... Let me stress that. If, in this imaginary world, you could make a new flag right away. They didn't, of course. The shortest time between states being admitted, going from one set of states to a different set, was when the difference between the 41st and the 42nd state. Montana was admitted Friday, November 8th, 1889, just 3 days later on Monday, November 11th, 1889. Washington was the 42nd state. Let me also ask you, do you know the only two states to be admitted to the Union on the exact same day?
I do not.
North Dakota and South Dakota.
Oh.
On November 2nd, 1889. Do you know which one was entered first?
North.
No one knows. Uh-huh. They were intentionally shuffled so that neither North Dakota or South Dakota could all ever claim to be an older state even by a few seconds.
Okay.
So. You seem to take this. Whenever I give these arcane facts to Antoinette, I get the eye roll. You seem to take it.
I mean, I'm kind of into it. I'm into it.
All right. You and I are back Sunday.
We are. 9 o'clock for weekend Ozarks at Large.
Right. And between now and then, you will have chances to call in the phone volunteers. But right now, you can pledge online.
At supportkuaf.com.
It's a very simple process. You determine the amount. You can even become a sustaining member, where a little contribution, like $10 a month, is actually a much bigger contribution over the course of a year.
Well, right. And it never stops. Well, it will. Right. I mean, when you tell us to.
Yes.
But that way, you know, you don't have to worry about it.
And it also eliminates... I know that some people say, well, I can't remember if I gave just 3 months ago or what. This way, you know, it's taken care of.
Right.
It's just coming out of your paycheck or your bank account or whatever.
Charged to your credit card.
Yeah. If you're a University of Arkansas employee like we are, I do payroll deduction.
I do, too.
All right. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville.
Farmington.
Okay.
Antoinette said that this morning.
So, Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
Thanks so much to our colleague Antoinette Grajeda for helping us out with the show. Thanks to Katie Hendrickson, Jacqueline Froelich, and Timothy Dennis for all their help this week. They'll be back with us next week as well. And thank you for contributing at supportkuaf.com.